Well, hello, I'm Savin Reddy, and I have here Michael Reese, a colleague of mine, and we're going to talk about Microsoft's newest language, uSQL.
Well, thanks for having me, Savin, and it's a pleasure for me to actually talk about a new language that we're introducing for doing big data analytics.
Okay, so first, no one's ever heard of this language before. What is it, and why should we care?
Well, one of the things that when you do big data analytics is you will notice that you have to do a lot of custom processing over the data. You're often operating over unstructured data as well as structured data, and you want to be able to scale out to over large amounts of data.
So there's two things, the kinds of data and the scale at which you have to work at.
And also the kind of custom processing you want to do.
So can you give an example of custom processing?
So for example, let's assume you're doing image processing. You have a large set of images that you want to do feature extractions over, thumbnail creation, etc. You will be using special code to actually crack open those images and do the feature extraction.
Oh, that's interesting. So this isn't just the normal relational stuff and ERP and those kind of queries. There's something more here.
There is quite a bit more. I mean, you can do big data processing over log files that you schematize into relational structure, but it's more than that. And even if you do that, you often apply special proprietary algorithms that might not be easily expressible using SQL statements, so you will do custom code even in that case.
So this truly is a SQL designed for big data.
Exactly.
Okay. And now, we're going to have to get this question out of the way. How does a developer who's familiar with T-SQL think about uSQL?
He should think about uSQL as basically being cousin of T-SQL.
A cousin. Okay.
In the sense that it is using the familiar SQL concepts such as tables and row sets and select from where, group by, if he wants to use those. But it adds the ability to operate over unstructured data using the SQL language, but without actually having to schematize the data a priori. And it also uses C-sharp type system and the C-sharp expression language instead of a SQL-specific type system and expression language, which then allows him to very easily add C-sharp code, even more easily than he can do in SQL Server using CLR extensions there.
Now, I realize we've been saying uSQL over and over. What does the U, what is it about?
Well, it's about you, obviously. It's also about unifying several different concepts. So it unifies the ability to operate over unstructured and structured data. It unifies the declarative aspect of basically giving you this scale out and parallelization and optimization without you as a programmer actually having to worry about. But it also gives you the ability to use imperative programming style to develop your custom code and your custom algorithms. And it kind of unifies that at the same level. So it's both native, basically, compared to some of the other big SQL or big data languages, which are either more focusing on the SQL aspects or are more focusing on the developer aspects.
Now, I know you're getting a lot of feedback from some customers on this. What's their reaction to it?
The reaction is actually very positive. A lot of people really like that integration of the user code integration into the declarative SQL language.
And user code here is the C-sharp, the .NET code.
The .NET code. Well, at the moment we are providing you with .NET, yes. So you can, the .NET type system and the .NET expression language is kind of core of the language. So they like that integration because it makes them more productive and it makes them able to leverage things that already have been written that they don't necessarily have to now custom develop for the uSQL environment.
Can you give an example of something that they're reusing in this context?
Yeah, so for example, they might have a specific image analysis library that they want to use. They might have JSON, Newtonsoft.json libraries that they can easily integrate and use. They can use most of the .NET libraries, just integrate them into the code and make use of them without actually having to like build a lot of wrapper codes or anything like that.
So now, Michael, I know you're really driving sort of the design of this language, you know. So can you give us a peek into what are some of the design principles or design points that you guys think about?
Yes. So some of the design principles that we have is basically that we are looking at the language, as I already mentioned, as kind of both giving us the declarative nature so that it makes it very easy to make use of the language, to make it very easy to get the scale out and performance that you're expecting from a big data language. In the addition, however, we also try to make the language minimal enough that it's not like a complicated experience to learn it. And we make sure that the C-sharp integration really comes to shine. So for example, in an early version of the language, we were still requiring you to define wrapper functions for the C-sharp functions.
Yeah.
And then after a while, we said, well, we are having C-sharp as an expression language. Why would I want to have to write these expression wrappers
right.
just to be close to SQL? So we basically dropped that and said, well, you use your C-sharp namespace qualified names, and you use them inside your C-sharp expression. And that makes the usability of the language quite a big, bigger.
So, you know, it is very rare, in fact, that Microsoft has a new language. This is the newest one. What's that like for you and the team?
Well, it's kind of exciting and scary at the same time. I mean, we are kind of excited to hope to see the reaction of the public once we make it more widely available. Because at the moment, we are kind of playing to a home crowd. Everybody is a C-sharp developer at Microsoft.
Yes.
So we'll see how the language gets reception. On the other hand, I think it's also it's not that scary in the sense, given that the history of the language is that it has evolved out of an internal language that we have been using for the last 6-7 years to do big data processing.
There's like 10,000 developers writing in that language.
Exactly.
So there's a big history in learning
exactly.
from that.
I think I'm more scared of those, actually, because they will probably come back and say, well, but you changed that favorite feature of mine.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we had to change the language to make it more acceptable for public consumption.
Mm. You sort of cleaned it up.
We cleaned it up. Yeah. We did some, you mentioned some of the philosophy behind the language. We basically, for example, decided to make it very clear that expressions are basically lambda expressions. So we do lambda composition inside the query expressions, something that we kind of did in the old language, but people weren't kind of clear about it.
Right.
So there were some...
I know that, you know, how the old language arose, and we had a lot of fast-paced development happened.
Exactly.
Right? And so you accrue things to a language, and then you guys have really done an amazing job cleaning it up.
Yes.
Right? Now, we've talked about the language without showing any of the language, so let's spend some time. And Michael, let's...
Yeah, so I have a few slides here.
Yeah.
I was asked to put it into slides because he didn't want to watch me type. So this is a very simple script that is basically written in NewSQL. What you notice here is that it basically consists of two parts. The first part is doing an extraction over a file using some extractor.cvs, so a CSV, so which indicates that the source file is a comma-separated value file, so it's a it's a blob, basically, living inside the Azure Data Lake.
Yeah.
And you're schematizing it as part of the query. Now, important here is that you then use that expression under the name @t, which is the variable name. So if you look at this sample script here, you will notice it's in two parts. The first part of the script is doing an extract over a file. The file is in a comma-separated value format. And what you do here is you basically schematize it as part of your as part of your extraction process. But note, it's only for the duration of that script. You don't have to create a table. You don't have to create any objects for that. It's in that query. And then you take the result, or you take that expression and output it again into a file.
Okay,
so it's basically copying the file from one place to the other.
So let me just read it out, what I'm seeing here. The first part, you're saying @t. And I know what T is. It's called a row set.
But
you're
a row set variable,
fill it with rows from a file called twitterhistory.csv.
Yes.
And you're telling it is a CSV file because you're saying extractors.csv, which is a built-in
It's a built-in
reader,
extractor that
right?
we give you to basically read such files. Yeah.
And it doesn't know what the schema is. So you're having to say the schema, date, time, author, and give it the types, which I know in this case are actually .NET types.
Yes.
Okay. And so the rows are coming into this @t.
Not quite, actually.
Okay.
What this does is it kind of looks like it's producing rows, and it is producing rows, but the @t is the name for the expression.
Mm.
So, because what we do actually is, when we compile this, we actually build up a huge expression tree. Mm-hmm. And you will see, when I evolve this example a little bit more complex, you will see that you will actually have a lot of transformation steps in between.
Yeah.
And then that gives us the ability to build up a huge expression tree that then gives us global optimization over the whole script.
So it's kind
instead
of, it's kind of wrong to think of ATT as like an intermediate table.
It's not an intermediate table.
It's expression.
It's a named expression.
Okay, I understand. And the source of the values are coming from this.
Exactly.
Okay. And then the second part, if I read it, is take that expression of those rows and just push it out to a CSV and using the opposite of an extractor and outputter.
Yes.
Right? So it's a simple copy.
It's a simple copy. It's not, assuming there is like no transformation happening during extract or output,
yeah.
It's a simple copy of the file. Okay, so now let's do something more interesting. Let's do some analysis over the data that I have. So one of the analyses is that I might want to count the authors of these tweets and just output, instead of outputting the tweets again, just output the name of the author and the number of tweets that they have been tweeting about. And let's do that in an ordered way, so I add an order by clause on the output. Mm. So this first extract is exactly the same that you saw before. Now, the transformation that I'm doing is actually I use select count from group by. So this is the standard SQL that you know and either love or hate, depending on how you feel about SQL. But it's basically everybody who writes SQL knows how to do that.
Right.
And now I give that a name again, address, for result. And now I output this into my Twitter analysis file. And I want to see that in descending order. So I put the order by on the output because I want to write in the order into the file.
Now, one thing that you haven't said, which I know people are maybe curious about, you know, I noticed you've uppercased a bunch of the IDs here.
Or yes. These, keywords.
Keywords.
Yes.
And that wasn't just a stylistic thing.
Yes.
That's actually critical to something here.
Yes. So you're pointing out something that is probably for people that come from SQL.
Yeah.
There are some people like me that always write uppercase because it's kind of a stylistic point. But actually, in USQL, we are requiring you to use uppercase for these keywords. And that has to do with the integration into C#. Mm-hmm. Because one, C# is case sensitive. Secondly, C# has also reserved keywords.
Oh, like as.
Like as,
yeah,
as
yeah.
Typecast, or select if you're using link, that might start making it harder for our compiler to
work. So it's actually part of the strategy of putting them together is using the uppercase.
Yes,
to put
yes.
Them. Okay.
So, yes, at the beginning you probably will get a little bit sometimes when you type, although I know our tooling support is very good in that, in like suggesting uppercasing it and things like that.
So this is a simple aggregation.
This is a simple aggregation, and you don't see any C# expressions here except for the two extractor and outputter invocations. These
correct.
Are actually C#
correct.
Expressions. Now let's take a look at adding some more complex stuff. Inside my tweets, I have references to people that I like tweet about with the @
that's
Twitter
right,
handle.
That's, yes.
So I have a simplified example here that now extracts all these handles mm-hmm. and allows me to add them into my analysis. So I'm not only seeing how many people are actually tweeting, but also how many people, how many times a certain person gets referenced.
So you
inside
want to see
tweets.
For all the people who were mentioned
yes.
in the tweets, how many times they were mentioned.
Exactly.
Not
together,
how many times they sent, how many times someone
both.
Talked about. Oh, both.
I do both. Got I do it. Both. Okay, so let's take a look at this. Now, this is already a little bit more complicated. And let me call out a few things. Mm-hmm. So the first statement I'm doing after doing the extraction is, now, I actually have a very complicated looking C# expression here. That
which one are you looking at?
I'm looking at the new array string,
okay.
tweet, split, etc.
Oh.
So what this is doing is, it actually takes the tweets, splits it into words.
The tweet here is the actual tweet text.
That's the tweet text, okay. the 140 whatever characters or so. It splits them by spaces, so I get individual words. And then I apply a link expression over
oh,
it.
The where, yes.
That does does a filter such that I only extract the words that start with an ampersand,
that's,
which
okay.
are basically dimensionings of other people
right.
inside the tweets.
So that's one. That's an enumerable of these strings that begin with
exactly.
Ads. Got it.
And now we don't support enumerable as a built-in type. So we support the array type. which is similar to an array type in Hive or even the ANSI SQL standard. Mm-hmm. And so I now create basically a new array type of type string that contains all these mentions. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what this does. Now, as you notice, there's a very easy integration. I just type tweet. Tweet is of type string. I dot and say split. And I can just apply my C-sharp libraries over strings on it. And I can, since the result of a split is an IEnumerable, I can now use link expressions.
Got it.
It flows very naturally out of it. There's no scaffolding I have to do, no boilerplate code that I have to write. It just does
what
I'm telling it to do.
You didn't try the helper method. You could have just
put it in line.
Yeah.
And then what I do in the next statement is, now I basically add a category here, so I know which one, which value has been an author, which mm-hmm. one was referenced inside a tweet down here, and I basically union these
Got
two.
It. You're getting the authors from the tweets,
yes,
and they're getting all the mentions,
yes,
from the thing you just calculated.
But now, of course, what I need to do to be able to do the group by is I have to kind of pivot my array into individual rows,
yes,
so that my group by, my relational group by, actually works. So that's done down here in this from clause with the cross apply explode. So let me quickly explain to what this actually does. Mm-hmm. I have a nice kind of visualization here. So let's assume my one row contains an array that contains at me and at you. Mm-hmm. These are the two references. Now what the explode does is it basically pivots it into one row per value.
Values
in the array.
In the column got split apart.
Actually, this is just the array.
Just the array. Okay.
So it basically takes an array and creates a row for each value in the array.
Yeah.
Now the cross apply applies this function to every single row. So what it does is it actually then now creates basically a new row set inside my from clause that has now one value for each value inside array in each row.
Got it.
So this is what cross-apply does. It's a standard SQL concept that is unfortunately not very well known, but very powerful.
Yes, yes. And is this, I've noticed Hive has cross-apply too. Is this similar syntax?
So Hive is using the ANSI standard called Lateral.
Lateral.
Explode is the same, both between Hive and us. We decided to use cross-apply for now. It's a very syntactic thing. If people start asking us to add lateral, we could add that. But as I mentioned earlier, we are trying to keep the language minimal for now and only add things that are kind of redundant if there are like good reasons for doing so. So okay, so now I basically have my authors and my mentioned ads. And now I do a select author category count star. I just added the category to my grouping. And then I do the output down there as normal. But you can see it's very easy to extend uSQL with your own custom code. You could wrap that into a function and deploy it either using code behind in Visual Studio or deploy an assembly if you want to reuse the expression in other contexts as well.
So let's kind of summarize what the entire thing did. There was a series of just tweets.
Yes.
And now what we ended up with was for each user in those tweets, whether they were the author or mentioned,
yes,
we have now for that user how many times were they created a tweet and how many times were they mentioned by a tweet.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay, this is actually pretty simple then when you think about what's actually happening. And
yes.
A purely logical description of how
exactly.
It works.
And there's no code in here that talks about how you scale that out.
Yep.
So if your input file is 15 kilobytes, it will work and it will work the same way and you write the same code if it's a file that is 5 terabytes.
That's right. That's right. Okay, great. Do we have any other examples?
No, I think that's it for now.
Okay.
But we can cook something up if there's anything more that you want
to know.
Just
one final thought. I mean, what would you like people to take away about uSQL?
Well, I actually have prepared a slide for that.
Oh, let's go to that slide.
So let me first maybe talk a little bit about what are some of the other additional cool stuff besides the integration with C#. One thing is if you do scale out or if you have like many of the big data analytics kind of environments, you often have incremental data arriving. Like you have log files.
One for each hour,
for each day, and so on. So we also give you a very easy way of operating over these sets of files by specifying in that location where you saw the file name, you specify a pattern. and then you can filter based on the pattern.
Oh, like the file names have year, month, date, and then I can
exactly,
select
and then you
files.
Can pay, select based on those patterns. And we also give you the ability to create partitioned tables, which is if you want to use tables because they give you additional indexes. Mm-hmm. And performance, etc. Then we give you the ability to do partition tables where you can add individual partitions, drop individual partitions, etc. Another cool feature is that we give you the ability to augment the data with high-value data that lives inside existing SQL databases. At the moment, we are looking at providing you Azure SQL databases, mm-hmm. SQL Server databases running inside an Azure VM, okay. And even like in conjunction with Azure Data Warehouse, we are currently looking at how to make that happen, although that might be a few weeks after we go public.
But you mentioned like federated queries here.
Yep.
So USQL, this is the very second, can in one single query take data from a data lake?
Yes.
Take data from a blob.
Yes.
And take data from Azure SQL DB. You can actually join all the data together.
Correct, yes.
Right? And just out of the box, we have that
feature. Out of the box, you have that feature.
Great. And then we're looking at expanding that in the future.
Yes.
Great.
Another thing is, as I mentioned, you have all the T-SQL concepts such as views, tabled valid functions that give you the ability to parameterize mm-hmm. views. Procedures, although we don't have the imperative logic of procedures, but we still give you like the ability to encapsulate basically scripts into something we call procedures. Okay. SQL windowing functions, so you can do like percentile and median value calculations and things
Who
like that.
Who doesn't love windowing functions?
Almost everybody doesn't love the syntax. They all love the capability.
Very powerful feature.
A very powerful feature. The people that did that in the SQL Standards Committee were a little bit, not doing any usability studies. And then you have also added complex types. You already saw an example with array. We also added map. So that's something that we kind of saw a lot of people use in the Hive context.
I know some people will probably ask, are we have structs on the way?
Yes, they are on the way. They are not quite here yet, so just stay tuned. So why use SQL? Because it unifies native declarativity mm-hmm. and extensibility and gives you the benefit of both, while taking away most of the negatives that you have if you're only having one first class and the second one is kind of bolted on. It also gives you the unification of querying structured and unstructured data, as you have seen. Focused primarily on querying unstructured data right now, but it's very easy to imagine that you can just refer to a table inside a from class. I mean, that's kind of logical. We talked about unifying local and remote queries and local and remote data sources. And my experience is that it increases the productivity and agility from day one for you and makes it very easy to basically query your data.
Inside Microsoft, I'm responsible for teaching a lot of our big data system. And, you know, the predecessor to this language I have to talk about a lot. And it is, in fact, a highly productive environment. You know, and we always tell them, get started with big data, you know, in the next 5 minutes.
Yes.
And this language lives up to that.
Yes. And to make that even easier, and I would like to thank your team, which is responsible for the portal, on that is that we also have a lot of samples where people basically can just go and basically execute their first query in seconds once the portal is up, and then once the service is up, and then they can start and play around with the language and write their own queries and so on.
And we'll have a bunch of these samples and sample like extractors and things on our GitHub.
Yeah, that's true. And so one thing that we hope that this will entice, because of the extensibility, it will start building an ecosystem for people, not just us, but other people, to actually provide a functionality that people can use inside USQL to be productive.
Okay. Well, Michael, thanks again. This is really great to see what's happening with USQL.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I hope I see you guys out on Azure using USQL.